Ladies and gentlemen, the National Broadcasting Company presents Lives of Great Men, the last program in a series on great leaders in human progress, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author of Great Leaders and many other books. In his talks, Dr. Griggs has built a story of civilization based on outstanding characters through the ages and how each one influences his own and future times. This evening, Dr. Griggs will discuss Edward Markham and American ideals. Ladies and gentlemen, Edward Howard Griggs.
My friend, it is a joy to conclude on a personal note my present series of broadcasts, as Edwin Markham has been my dear friend for many years. While teaching at Stanford University, I belonged to a club in San Francisco of aspiring young artists and literary men. One evening, Markham read us a paper on Ruskin, so deeply impressing me that as chairman of our university committee, I invited him to give the baccalaureate address at commencement. He spoke characteristically on the social conscience. He was then principal of a school in Oakland, appreciated as poet only by a group of friends and admirers. The same year came his marriage with his devoted life comrade, Anna Catherine Murphy, also an Oakland school principal and my friend. The year their son Virgil was born came the extraordinary wave of literary fame with the publication of The Man with the Hole. Just as I had established myself in New York, beginning my life work as itinerant teacher, Mrs. Markham wrote that they were planning to ride the wave of fame east and asked me to find a place for them to live. Accordingly, I leased for them the first home they occupied here before their settlement in the lovely one on Staten Island. Markham's English Welsh ancestry goes back to the Norman Conquest. Becoming Puritan dissenters, both Winchells and Markhams removed to Holland and thence to New England. Many of them fought well in our war for independence. With the development of the Northwest Territory, both branches moved west, where Samuel Markham married Elizabeth Winchell, later trekking to the far west in a covered wagon, the husband being captain of the train. His wife was thrown down and injured by a buffalo stampede. There were surprise attacks by Indians, but the Markham family arrived on the Pacific coast to settle in Oregon City, where Edwin was born in 1852. His boyhood was thus in the adventurous pioneer period. The father died when Edwin was a lad of seven. His Spartan mother carried heroically the burden of her family, keeping a store in Oregon City, planting apple seeds thoughtfully brought from the East, helping to start the amazing Oregon fruit development. She was also a poet laureate of the new settlement, writing poems for significant occasions, as her son has done for still more important ones. The astonishing California development, which had followed the gold strike, lured the mother south to a ranch in the Suisun country northwest of San Francisco Bay. Here young Markham herded cattle, attending the yearly 3 months in a one-room redwood schoolhouse. Echoes of the Civil War stirred Markham's boyhood. The strongly abolitionist family rejoiced in Starr King's splendid fight to swing the state to the Union cause. Markham was 13 when the war closed, and the same year experienced his first literary awakening. Into the old black school came an inspired teacher, Harry Hill, the enchanter, a sorcerer of song, Markham calls him. He introduced the eager boy to Bryant, Moore, Tennyson, and Poe, also bringing to consciousness his love of the California nature world. At the close of the short term, Hill moved on, but the awakening had come through the contagion of a great soul, the ultimate force in all education. In an abandoned house, the boy found other treasures: Byron, Pope's Iliad, Scott's Tales. He plowed fields for a neighbor earning $20, with which his mother bought in San Francisco the poems Hill had opened to him. Thus progressing, Markham hungered more and more for a college education. Without telling his intention, at 17 he rode away toward the Coast Range. His weirdest experience followed. The bandit Black Bart captured and kept him prisoner for weeks. He poured out his dreams to the not unfriendly captor, and Black Bart, failing to make a bandit of the youth, released him. Markham found work on another ranch, but his mother, who had followed him, took him home. Shortly after, digging beside the doorpath, he unearthed a bag with $900 in gold coins. He always wondered if Black Bart could have placed it there to aid him in carrying through his plans. The find gave him 2 years in the San Jose Normal School while working as blacksmith. At 20, he was engaged to teach school in picturesquely situated San Luis Obispo, near high mountains and sea. He arrived to find 9 pupils, but no schoolhouse. A palisade was built around a huge oak tree, under whose thick-leaved boughs Markham taught his first pupils. He took 2 years off to graduate from Santa Rosa College, and then became a school principal in Oakland. Since his first awakening, Markham had been writing poems, and gradually his work came to be accepted by important magazines. In 1899, in the San Francisco exhibit, he saw Millet's painting of The Man with the Hoe, and wrote his poem of that title, publishing it in the San Francisco Examiner. It brought the swiftest and widest acclaim any poem has ever received. Aided by skillful press publicity, it became instantly a nationwide, indeed a worldwide, subject of praise and discussion. It has been translated into some 40 languages and reprinted in an estimated 50,000 newspapers. The poem is a passionate arraignment of the age-old oppression that brutalized the toiler. Bowed with the weight of centuries, he leans upon his hoe and gazes on the ground, the emptiness of ages in his face, and on his back the burden of the world. Who made him dead to rapture and despair, a thing that grieves not and that never hopes, stolid and stunned, a brother to the ox? Who loosened and let down this brutal jaw? Whose was the hand that slanted back this brow? Is this the thing the Lord God made and gave to have dominion over sea and land? To trace the stars and search the heavens for power, to feel the passion of eternity? Through this dread shape, humanity betrayed, plundered, profaned, and disinherited, cries protest to the judges of the world, a protest that is also prophecy. O masters, lords, and rulers in all lands, how will the future reckon with this man? How answer his brute question in that hour when whirlwinds of rebellion shake the world? How will it be with kingdoms and with kings, with those who shaped him to the thing he is, when this dumb terror shall reply to God after the silence of the centuries? Markham thus expressed, as in all his work, that wakened social conscience and idealism, which is America's finest spiritual achievement. He was prepared to do it. At 16, he was brooding over the social ideals and the teaching of Jesus, comparing them with the life of the workers with whom he toiled. A little later, he was stirred by the indictments of society in Hugo, Lamennais, Ruskin, and Fourier. So at 45 came the turning point in Markham's life. He was able to remove to the cosmopolitan center of the country, dedicating the second half of his long life wholly to poetry and other literary work. The Man with the Hoe gave the title to his first published volume of verse. His fame brought numerous calls for public lectures, to which he responded joyously and effectively, in all parts of the United States. In 1900, the New York City Republican Club asked Markham for a poem to celebrate their Lincoln birthday dinner. He wrote and read them his Lincoln poem, which next to The Man with the Hoe has had widest acclaim. President Taft invited him to read it at the dedication of the Noble Lincoln Memorial in Washington, and it is now inscribed on the Greek temple enshrining the log cabin in which Lincoln was born at Hodgenville, Kentucky. The finest lines of the poem are those of the concluding image. And when he fell in whirlwind, he went down, as when a lordly cedar, green with boughs, goes down with a great shout upon the hills and leaves a lonesome place against the sky. Several of the poems in the Lincoln volume are reminiscent of Markham's California life, as a Mendocino memory and a blossoming bough. A blossoming bough against the sky, and all my blood is aleap with life, as though glad violins went by in wild, delicious strife. And the Suisun hills again are green, and I am a boy in the canyons deep, where the gray sycamores flicker and lean, and waters plunge and sleep. It is noteworthy that Markham's love of nature developed during the first half of his life in California, since the nature world there contrasts strikingly with that inspiring the poetry of Whittier, Longfellow, or Wordsworth. It is indeed more akin to Italy than to New or Old England. It is strong in color and light, majestic and smiting, but rarely tender and intimate. You can drive for many miles over mountain roads, with vast redwood forest rising, meadowlands below dotted with leaning live oaks, long rows of unshading eucalyptus, hills tumbling over each other down to the Pacific, without finding a nook inviting you to get out and eat your luncheon. Instead of shy anemones or waxen bloodroots in the forest, the wildflowers cover the open plain, brilliant red and blue, or a sweep of deep gold poppies. The high gray days, frequent in the eastern climate, when all nature takes on a softened meditative mood, do not come in the coast country. There it is either insistent, brilliant sunshine, or the obscuring fog rolls in. It is such a world that molded the strong, colorful nature imagery of Markham's poetry. In 1915, he published California the Wonderful, with beautiful portrayals of his beloved coast scenery. The same year appeared his third volume of poems, Shoes of Happiness, working a new vein in the charming allegorical stories told in rollicking couplets, so simple as to delight even a child audience. The volume also contained the much-discussed Virgilia and its sequel, The Crowning Hour, exquisite symbolic poems portraying the goading dream of life's transcendent fulfillment. With these were fresh poems of social vision. The introductory Outwitted gives at once Markham's quizzical humor and generous spirit. He drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle that took him in. Markham is particularly happy in these four-liners, as he calls them. In his 60s, he suffered financial losses, forcing him to extend his lecture work to meet expenses. He faced such misfortunes with the same quiet courage shown in meeting all life problems. In 1920 appeared Gates of Paradise, with tender personal verses and poems rising nobly to the World War. Among the numerous prize poems, Israfel, portraying Poe, is particularly beautiful in singing melody. Markham's late work was published in the volume 80 Songs at 80, showing his steady growth forward, since as pure poetry, much in the last volume surpasses poems previously written. Here are his tenderest love poems, his exquisite sonnets, and strong enunciations of faith, as in The Look Ahead. I am done with the years that were, I am quits. I am done with the dead and old. Their minds worked out, I delved in their pits, I have saved their grain of gold. Now I turn to the future for wine and bread. I have bidden the past adieu. I laugh and lift hand to the years ahead. Come on, I am ready for you. Last July, Markham sent me the manuscript of a new poem, interpreting Judas as no traitor, but only seeking to push his master into proving himself lord of the world. What creative power at 86. Only as poetry is spoken aloud can his full music be enjoyed. Markham's last fine service has been to make records of his greatest poems so that his challenging voice may be heard long after the speaker is silent. Wide as is the range of Markham's verse, he will go down the years as the poet of American social idealism. Whatever our faults as a people, and they are many, we have awakened to the aspiration for equal opportunity, social justice, comradeship in freedom, and are struggling, if often blunderingly, toward its fulfillment. Of that social ideal, Edwin Markham is the outstanding prophetic singer, proclaiming that each must achieve in harmony with all the new Trinity. Three things must a man possess if his soul would live and know life's perfect good. Three things would the all-supplying Father give: bread, beauty, and brotherhood. Now, in concluding this series of challenging leaders, may I wish all my friendly listeners a happy summer with some good reading, and better still, some earnest thinking. And may we all come together again in the early fall.
And may we that, Dr. Griggs. Edwin Markham and America fall. And may we that, Dr. Griggs. The Great Men, presented by Dr. Edwin and American Ideals, has been the subject of the last program in the series titled